Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. By 2030, about a third of the people living in Columbus will be older than 50. The change ahead isn't limited to Columbus either. There are more than 35 million Americans age 65 and older. That number will double in the next 25 years when one in every five Americans will be 65 and older. Now, I like to think of 50 as the new 30. I'm one of those pathetic people. But some communities are looking to change. The movement is called Lifelong Communities, and some 200 community leaders and planners from all walks of life in Central Ohio are meeting this week to talk about that and ask one big question: are we ready? What does that mean to be ready, and how could it change life for everyone else? Joining us later on will be Cindy Farson. She is the director of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging, Laura Koprowski of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Also, Catherine Lawler of the Atlanta Regional Planning Commission, where they've been working on these issues for some years now. And right now, Linda Artis. She is executive director of Senior Independence, and it's an Ohio nonprofit organization. It works at helping seniors live with confidence in their own homes. Senior Independence serves nearly 75,000 people in 41 counties in Ohio. So welcome to the show, Linda.
Thank you.
I am told that you are the instigator of the Lifelong Communities Initiative in Central Ohio. What does that mean? How are you involved?
Well, I don't know if I can take credit for that, but in Senior Independence, we have always been looking at what is new and innovative and that would affect seniors. And in doing some searching, I ran across this idea of lifelong communities and age-friendly cities that is being worked through in some other cities throughout the United States and the world. And I thought it seemed like an appropriate thing for the Central Ohio area.
This is a very concrete conversation you're going to be having on the 12th. I mean, you'll be batting around ideas and concepts, but it has taken hold in New York City and Atlanta, as I mentioned earlier, where people are actually actively engaged in making the communities more age-friendly. But is this just about, I guess, old people?
Well, it's not about old people specifically. What I think they found in some of these other communities is that when they made changes that were quote-unquote for seniors, it actually had favorable results for people at all different ages. Young families with children were found to have more livable communities. People who are in their middle years found their communities more livable. So it translated across all age groups.
And it's a global conversation. It's not just happening in the United States.
Absolutely. In fact, some other countries are very much farther ahead in terms of this aging shift than the United States. For example, Japan is by far ahead of us in what they are being challenged with.
In what ways? Can you give us some examples of what you mean by farther ahead? What are they doing?
Well, in simply that their population shift had occurred before the prediction of the one in the United States. And so they are having experience with having to make some changes, and it is through the World Health Organization that some of this first took hold, because they began studying cities not just in the United States but in Japan and in South America and in Europe that were already starting to see the impact of this aging bubble.
If we don't do anything, if we didn't change anything about Central Ohio, what would we be faced with in 2030? How would our world change?
Well, it would certainly be a less livable and desirable situation for the many of us who will be in that age group. We're finding that things such as how do people get around once they no longer are able or desirous of driving? How do you do simple everyday things? How do you stay connected socially? How do you go to the grocery? How do you get your hair done? Just basic everyday things. So if we make our community one where people can achieve things more easily, their lives become more full.
My guest is Linda Artis. She's executive director of Senior Independence. It's a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping seniors live with confidence in their own homes. And she's the instigator of a conference this week. It's attracting some 200 community leaders from all kinds of organizations. They're talking about how to prepare Central Ohio for the changes ahead in By 2030, for example, a third of the people living in Columbus will be older than 50. If you have a question or comment for us, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org or Twitter us at @AnnFisherWOSU. How did you know that Central Ohio was ready for the conversation?
I think part of what this week's event is intended to do is really determine, is Central Ohio ready?
Just to
for
have
this?
The conversation.
To have the conversation, to present it as an idea, to find out what some other communities have done, how they approached this, and what changes they undertook in their communities, and then determine whether the people in this community feel this is a worthwhile endeavor.
Do you what has been the reaction so far? 200, that's, I don't know, is that what you were hoping for? Is that way short of what you were shooting at, or what?
It's about what we were hoping for, and the individuals who are attending thus far really represent a broad range of people across this community, and that was, I think, very central to having this. We find that people often gather in silos. People working in one area tend to meet and discuss and plan with people working in a similar area. So you have city planners talking to other city planners. You have healthcare professionals talking to other healthcare professionals. It isn't often that we put business people, educational people, healthcare people, public service people, planners, city government, local government, all in the same room to have a conversation about one singular topic. And getting all of that input, I think, should help us determine what our next steps are, if any.
How are you going to approach the conversation? How does it start out?
We have two speakers who will be here from two cities which have already moved forward on this, one from New York City and one from the Atlanta area. And so they will do a presentation, and then our intention is to really engage the attendees in dialogue. So there will be several breakout sessions where people will have discussion around various points, and then we will have some panel discussion where points and questions that are raised are brought back to both the guest speakers and then a panel that also includes some local people.
Right now, people live in subdivisions or in communities. They have yards. They have houses with stairs. That's where they live. That's where they want to live. A lot of people in my community do live there for most of their adult life.
Yes.
They don't leave. They're lucky enough maybe to have a lot of help. How would there be something kind of, when you're envisioning a lifelong community, would there be a physical change? Would these places go away necessarily?
I don't think they go away necessarily. I think there are refinements that can take place. When at Senior Independence, one of the things that we do quite often is talk to individuals and their families about their own personal plans. And that's really sort of how some of this came about as well. From the idea that if your intention is to live in your own home throughout your life, you really do have to be planful about that. You can't just assume that it will all work out. So if you know you want to stay at home and you live in a two-story house with all bedrooms and bath facilities on the second floor, it may not serve you well in your 70s or 80s, and you might need to do some planning about how can you rearrange some of your living space to accommodate your needs. In the same way, I think we need to look at our community. It may be serving us very well now, but if we experience this population shift, do we need to do some things that will make it more able to sustain the people that are living here? And I think one of the examples that we saw in a community, for example, was making the street crossing lights longer. Because it is difficult sometimes to get across some of the larger streets.
I heard they were doing that in New York City.
Exactly. So just things like changing the timing on the walk lights has made a big difference for people in their community. So it's not all about enormous structural change. Some of it is just about making some fine, subtle changes.
You know, besides the baby boom, healthcare advances are one big factor in why there's going to be so many more people around who are older. But the healthcare advances also make us healthier, don't they? I mean, isn't it going to be a healthier, more vigorous aging population than maybe it might have been had you had comparable numbers 50 years ago?
Absolutely. That is the trend that's being recognized. Excuse me. In the past, it was most normal for people to have, first of all, a much shorter lifespan, and to experience a very slow, gradual decline over a considerable period of time. And what people seem to be finding now is that it's much more common for people to have a relatively long, healthy life and then a very sort of rapid decline towards the end. And so people are living not only longer, but healthier and able to be involved and be engaged in their communities if their communities support that. I think one of the things people have looked at is retirement. And I'm sure most of us, if we look back to our grandparents, know that they did not live much longer than the time in which they worked. But that's no longer the case. And so how do we find a way, for example, to allow people to maybe not work full time, but still contribute in a workforce, to use the experience and the institutional knowledge and the people skills that they've gathered over many, many, many years for the benefit of the company with which they were affiliated or some other company, and still have some leisure time and maybe slow down a little bit in those extra years that we all seem to be looking forward to.
A lot of people don't plan to slow down at all.
And I think that that's
partly economics.
That's
partly
true.
Why should I?
And I think both of those things are options for people. And I think we should certainly hope for that. But I think we also have to plan as if there may be other things that, you know, steal us away from that, at least for periods of time.
Okay, we're going to have to take a break. My guest has been Linda Artis, Executive Director of Senior Independence. She is apparently the instigator of this conference coming up on August 12th. It's gathering about 200 community leaders and planners from all over Central Ohio to talk about and ask the big question: are we ready for 2030, when a third of the people living in Columbus will be older than 50? Linda, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Coming up later, Catherine Lawler. She is the person in charge of the effort in Atlanta at the Atlanta Regional Planning Commission to manage this effort there. It's been going on for a few years now, and she'll tell us what they've learned from their experiences. We'll be right back on All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. Hear more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Subscribe to podcasts of Arts Unscripted and reviews of the latest books, movies, local restaurants, and theater performances. Podcast stories from WOSU arts and culture contributors online at WOSU.org/podcasts. And you can always get access to WOSU at our website, WOSU.org. Hear the latest updates from NPR and WOSU News from the convenience of your computer by streaming on the web. Listen online anytime at WOSU.org. And it's 82 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Sunshine today and a high of 90 degrees. A few clouds tonight and a low of 65. Some sunshine for Tuesday, and there's also a slight chance of rain for Tuesday afternoon, a high of 92. Looking ahead to Wednesday, a chance of rain, cloudy skies, and a high of 92. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Joining us now, Catherine Lawler of the Atlanta Regional Planning Commission. Catherine was instrumental in getting the Lifelong Communities Initiative going in Atlanta. Welcome to the show, Catherine.
Thanks. I'm delighted to be here.
I mentioned earlier when the statistics will be coming in, what the statistics will be in coming decades, that one in five Americans will be 65 and older by 2035. Georgia and the Southeast United States will see even faster growth in the older population. What are you looking at?
We expect to have 1.2 million older people in the metropolitan region, and that's going from, you know, just a couple hundred thousand now. So we're looking at tremendous growth over a very short period of time.
So you've been looking at this issue for a few years now. When did it start to percolate in Georgia and Atlanta?
Well, we really began in 2002. We had the opportunity through a Robert Wood Johnson-funded project to really begin to ask some questions. What do we need for our future? How will we meet the needs of our changing older adult population? And that began really a series of a couple of years of really beginning to investigate the issue and most importantly going out and meeting with what we call current and future older adults. So those who are older adults right now and those who will be in the future, and talking to them about their lives, what are their challenges, and what are some of the things that they need to maintain a high quality of life. And that began to shape the Lifelong Communities Initiative, which was really formally launched in 2007.
You know, given the alternatives, aging is a good thing, but a lot of folks have a hard time talking about it and making these kind of plans. What kind of pushback was there in Atlanta and in your area as far as talking about it? Do people really want to talk about it? Do you want to be talking about being a community of older people in this day and age?
Well, we found certainly that aging is, well, actually, quite honestly, we did a project on wills and dying, and that was less popular. But aging is right
okay.
up there with it.
Okay.
And, you know, part of the reason is because, I mean, for every stereotype you can imagine, and we could talk about that for hours, mm-hmm. but the other big thing is that people don't think they have aging problems. You know, if you're growing older and living in your house and, you know, you have a leaky roof, you don't ever think that that's an aging problem. Yet we sometimes try to serve that need through aging services. What you need is a roofer, or sometimes you need a plumber, and you might need some help managing the project because, you know, it's easy to get ripped off or have the wrong work done and that sort of thing. So we began to move very far away from the word aging and just talk about people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
The other problem with aging is, who is aging? You know, I can tell you, I did a focus group one time, and a couple of women from the focus group took me aside afterwards and really talked to me quite seriously about how they did not appreciate that kind of language. And I, you know, thanked them for the information and the feedback, and they're willing to be honest about it. And I said, if you could just give me a little context, how old are you? And every single one of them was over 85. So nobody is really doing the aging. It's the guy next to you. So if it's a word that nobody identifies and it's an issue that doesn't describe the needs or the concerns, then it seems to be a very unhelpful word, and we've tried to stay away from it.
I kind of think of it in parallel to universal design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody can use it, but for some reason it's been identified more closely with people who are disabled.
Mm-hmm.
So the aging thing, everybody gets older.
Well, it's interesting because if you're interested in making change, so let's, you know, use universal design mm-hmm. as an example. That certainly is a change in the way we build both the homes we live in and the commercial buildings, the entire built environment, right?
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a sense of urgency in order to make change happen. And certainly disability or aging and the growth in both of those populations, quite frankly, because there certainly are more disabled people now than there were previously because we all get to live much longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have to have a sense of urgency. So it's not like you can wish the issue away. You can't completely ignore why these things are important and for whom they become urgent issues. But at the same time, it can also very quickly be dismissed as, well, that's just, yet another special interest group with their special needs. And when we're talking about community change, really everybody does benefit from it. And so I think we try in Atlanta to really walk a very delicate balance between making sure people understand the urgency of the issue and the very real situations that individuals are facing, but also to make sure that we underscore the benefits for all people when you do something like universal design, or you relook at the way communities are laid out, or you find new ways of building in healthy, active lifestyles into a community.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. My guest is Catherine Lawler. She is with the Atlanta Regional Planning Commission. She was instrumental in getting the Lifelong Communities concept or initiative going in Atlanta. If you'd like to speak with her, give us a call or email us, or you can go to Ann Fisher, WOSU, if you prefer to Twitter. Why the Atlanta Regional Planning Commission, Catherine? Why is the initiative embraced within that?
Well, we are actually unique, but then not so unique. We're the Regional Planning Commission, which means we're in charge of issues like transportation and land use and water quality, actually, and workforce development. But we also are the Area Agency on Aging.
Oh, okay.
It's the biggest thing that we do, budget-wise, staff-wise, services-wise.
Has it always been like that?
It has always been like that, and it's actually true of 30% of the area agencies in the country. So that's why it's unique, but not as unique as you'd think. So we have a real opportunity to look at a wide range of issues because everybody works together here.
So that made a lot of sense. So does a place like Central Ohio have any hope when its agencies are siloed the way they are?
Well, you know, I say that, and then I can tell you we have silos within our own office building, right? I mean, we have people who work next door to each other who haven't had a meeting together in 2 decades. So we have our – just being in proximity isn't what it's about. And we've definitely learned through our initiative in Atlanta, and I hope we can really share some of this with you folks in Ohio on Thursday, is, you know, what does it take to break down silos, and how do you help people in different disciplines learn to speak the same language and care about the same issues? And you know, we've made some progress on that. It's probably one of the most exciting structural changes that have happened in this work beyond what's actually going on in the community. You cannot talk about transportation planning in this region anymore. You won't go to a single meeting where people don't bring up aging. And I can tell you 5 years ago, in the 2,000-page regional transportation plan, older adults were a 2-page appendix on the back. So things have changed in terms of how we're working together.
They're talking about the funding from the federal government to establish a three-part high-speed rail in Ohio. It's very controversial here. But one topic that doesn't come up hardly at all is the effect that having rail would have on older people who can't travel to other cities anymore because they can't drive.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like a big downer. And a lot of times I hear criticism from older people who say, why do we want to go backwards, back to the old days?
In terms of the rail?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, they are it's all about choices. And so there's not one answer for a whole large group of people like the aging population.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know, it's as diverse as any other population. And so anytime we try to solve an issue, like, for example, mobility through one answer, you know you're going to be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, some people will want to drive. Some people will drive much longer than they should drive. Some people will continue driving quite capably. They'll be very good drivers right up until the end. And so that's fine. But the point is that if you have this large of a population with this diverse a set of needs, you know, going at it with one solution is the way that you'll surely fail. And that's what we see all the time, and particularly with transportation, what that does to people in their lives when they become isolated and unable to get their basic needs.
So what have been the biggest challenges since 2002 when you put that grant into operation?
What were some of the biggest challenges,
yeah,
did you say? Well, really this whole concept of – we're just a big suburban area in the Atlanta region, and we have communities that – most of our communities were built completely – ignoring the fact that people grow older. And So our biggest challenge is that we have all of these years of investment in communities and infrastructure and buildings and roads and bridges and all of that, all of which doesn't work for the new reality, which is the fact that many of us are going to live into our into the 90s and beyond 100. So that is some of our biggest challenges, that how do you begin to retool all of this infrastructure so that it works for a changing population, and what are the consequences if you don't? And so beginning to understand that and articulate it was one of the biggest steps we began to take. And then the other thing was looking at, well, these communities don't happen haphazardly. They happen because of the rules we've created that govern zoning and building codes and that sort of thing. And so we began to look at how do we begin to break our own rules and rewrite them for the reality of the 21st century, which is really about longevity.
So if somebody goes to Atlanta, is there anything they would look at and say, oh, that's different? Look at how they're making that easier for older people.
Well, I think what you'd begin to see, first of all, is that we have a lot of communities who have embraced the challenge. So we have a number of communities who said, this is right. My goodness, what have we been doing, and begin to take that on. So we use a three-pronged framework, actually, which looks at transportation. It looks at the housing choices. Those are sort of the one part of it. Mm-hmm. And the other is healthy living. And the other is making sure people know, so because people have to be educated in order to make good decisions for themselves. So communities all across our region have decided to tackle one, two, or three of those options. We have one county that's re-looking at all of its policies and programs, from public works to transportation to housing to certainly aging services, and saying, are we doing this in a way that promotes lifelong communities? We have the Atlanta Housing Authority has taken on renovating all of its senior high-rises to better integrate them into the existing community so that they really can become part of a lifelong community rather than islands in and of themselves. We have some communities who are taking a first step by working multi-generationally to create community gardens, saying, you know, we just need to begin and learn while we're working together, build the alliances while doing that. We also have communities that have actually gone through a complete redesign process where they now have a whole new blueprint for their community, how it can be redesigned, and they're working now in this downturn, certainly in the economy, and that building has slowed, to begin to put the rules in place so that when it building comes back, they are ready to rebuild in a way that's more supportive of people of all ages. So right now we have a lot of different things going on, a lot of people trying to put ideas on the ground and learning how to do that most effectively. So I think that's where what you would come to Atlanta and begin to see. And I think I would bet that you'd be hard-pressed to go to a meeting on a wide range of topics now where people aren't talking about aging. So no matter what you were here for, you'd likely to hear a discussion on aging and hear the facts about 1.2 million. That's really gotten into the water.
That's definitely a lot of people. Out of the population of how many?
We will have about 7 million people, so it'll mm-hmm. be about 1.2 million. Mm-hmm.
So are you finding since 2002, because I think you've been involved in this at one level or another since then, right? You've
mm-hmm.
been there at the,
mm-hmm.
at the start, that you're getting asked to travel a lot more, to speak to other organizations and other communities like you are this week?
Yes, and part of that is because our agency said from the get-go that we are absolutely committed to learning with and sharing with anybody in the country who wants to begin to tackle this issue. Anything, any good idea we can take from another place, we're open to, and any opportunity we have to talk about what we're doing is an opportunity for us to evaluate it and learn from others and get their feedback. So we've been committed from the start that there was no way we could actually take this on without really committing to learning and being a part of sharing that. So every opportunity we have, we either seek out or jump at, because it's an important part of our process too.
Is there a sense from some people that you're just trying to turn the world into a big sun city?
Well, we often get asked that question. Is that, you know, do you go to Florida and Arizona and say this is what we're going to be? And we get back to, I guess, what I was saying on transportation. Those places are great for some people, and that's exactly what some people want. But there's no way that can be the answer for all people. It just it defies logic. We know it's not true. Only a very small percentage of older people live in those communities now, and you could even double that, and still we'd have a whole lot of other people who may not have the options they need. Our issue is that the industry has already proven they know how to build those communities, they know how to run those communities, and a lot of people are very happy there. What we don't have answers on is for all the rest of the folks. So our emphasis has been not on a very traditional senior housing model. In fact, we look very much at age restriction as an indication that it's not a lifelong community, right? By definition, if you say only older people can live here, then you can't live there throughout your lifetime. So our emphasis is on the other end of the spectrum. Not saying that that's not good for some people, but we think that's where the R&D, if for lack of a better phrase, needs to be, and that's where we need to put our emphasis for right now.
How has the economy, you mentioned the economy earlier during this town period, but how has it played into your game plan, what's happened in the last few years?
You know, we talk about this is, for this project, it's been an opportunity to take a deep breath. Our region, before this downturn, couldn't build fast enough. I mean, we used to regionally see probably somewhere between 12 and 13,000 building permits per month, and last year we had like 6,000 in the entire region pulled. So we've seen a dramatic change. And what happened when things were going that fast is that nobody was thinking, and we were building kind of the same thing over and over again without a lot of variation. And it really was hard to interject these ideas when you had builders and communities saying, we can build this product, and we know it's going to sell, and it'll be fine. And here we were saying, but you really should think about something different, and they didn't have any reason to do that. So the downturn in the economy has been, you know, really a great opportunity to sit back and work with folks and go back to the policy issue, look long-term, do some more significant planning so that they're positioning their very limited dollars right now strategically. So it's forced us to be a lot smarter as a community. And for this issue, because it's a little bit complicated, that's really been a great benefit.
So when you travel to places like you will this week to Central Ohio, what do people want to hear about?
Well, I find they often want to hear what we've done and how we did it, and what were some of the challenges that, if at all possible, they could avoid, right? So nobody needs to make all the same mistakes we have. And so I usually try to emphasize, and I certainly will hope to engage in dialogue with folks on Thursday about how we had to start by listening and really get out and hear why, what challenges people were facing and why they had those. Because it turned out our ideas about their challenges were certainly different than the way they described them and were living them. So listening was really critical. And the other thing was constantly forcing ourselves to work with people we'd never worked with before. So every meeting that we had that was just the usual suspects, we would do a little debrief afterward and figure out why weren't we getting to folks that you know, perhaps don't normally come to our meetings, don't normally come to discuss these issues. Our goal was always to diversify and work cross-disciplinary and to be real conscientious about that. Turns out, you know, just inviting people to a meeting doesn't create change. It's really about building a relationship across what are can sometimes be significant barriers. So those are kind of two of the key points that got us started in the direction we've ended up going.
Okay, Catherine Lawler, that's all the time we have. Catherine Lawler is with the Atlanta Regional Planning Commission. She's going to be coming to Central Ohio this week to talk with about 200 community leaders and planners from all over the Central Ohio area to talk about how we're going to adapt by 2030, when about a third of the people living in Columbus will be older than 50. Catherine, thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
Thank you. I really enjoyed it. I look forward to seeing everyone on Thursday.
All righty. We'll be right back with more. Cindy Farson of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging, and also Laura Kaprowski of the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Jonathan Eich takes us back to the Roaring Twenties in Chicago, when cops and judges were on the take, bootleggers were mowing each other down, and Al Capone bragged to reporters about his underworld clout. He made his reputation the day he approached a rival in broad daylight.
Says hello, puts the gun to his cheek, fires six times, and holds him on the bar stool as he keeps firing.
What you didn't know about Al Capone. Join us.
And that discussion and much more on Fresh Air, it begins in 20 minutes starting at noon, right here on WOSU 820 NPR News. Thanks for joining us for All Sides with Ann Fisher today. You can hear more from WOSU anytime at WOSU.org. Listen to All Sides with Ann Fisher whenever you want with the online archive. Podcast new and archived shows from all the guests and topics. Podcast All Sides at WOSU.org/All Sides. It's 82 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:41 this morning. Sunshine today and a warm day with a high of 90 degrees. A few clouds move in tonight, a low of 65. Some sunshine for Tuesday. There's also a slight chance of an afternoon shower or a thunderstorm, a high of 92 for Tuesday. And looking ahead to Wednesday, a chance of rain and cloudy skies, and still warm with a high of 92. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're bringing home the local perspective now on lifelong communities and what such a concept might mean for Central Ohio. Cindy Farson is director of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging, which embraces eight counties. Welcome to the show, Cindy.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And also Laura Koprowski. She is director of government and public affairs for the Mid-Ohio Regional Planning Commission. Thanks for joining us, Laura.
Sure. Thanks.
Cindy, the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging conducts a periodic survey to hear what works and what doesn't for seniors in the region. So what's working?
Well, the mission of our agency is to develop service systems in our communities to help people stay in those communities independently for as long as possible, as long as they want to live there. So our surveys have generally been around services. And we have some great pluses in Central Ohio when it comes to services. Our passport program for those Medicaid eligible is large and open right now. We have levies in our counties backed by communities for those that aren't Medicaid eligible. So service gap-wise, we're doing fairly well, but some of the housing, transportation, some of the issues you've been talking about, those are tough. Those are tough issues as the number grows. We have 260,000 older adults, and that's going to grow by 90% in Central Ohio by 2030. So we're concerned. You know, we realize, and we've been watching Atlanta for some time, we realize social service agencies can't do it all. I think people think, well, we'll call the area agency, we'll call our local aging organization and see what can happen. But these are the kinds of changes that are community-wide when it comes to housing and visitability and transportation. So we were very excited when Linda wanted to put together a group to talk about these things. So we're excited to see what can come from this.
If you'd like to join the conversation, 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can Twitter us at AnnFisherWOSU. Linda, you do public affairs for MORPC. How will governments have to get involved in this process?
Well, I think it's important for governments to get involved because, just as Cindy was saying, it's not just about the social service agencies. It is about our communities and how they're designed and how we live in them. And I think that there have been some very proactive steps on the part of our communities. And just two examples would be, one with our housing is that the City of Columbus and Franklin County have come together and created something called the AWARE manual that they are using when they are involved in housing projects and building homes in communities. They have standards that they're trying to follow and working with contractors so that these homes have the ability for people to live with live in them for the rest of their lives or as long as possible, kind of the concept of aging in place. And so that's a great first start. And while they're embracing it and through their funds, they're able to get that going and to hold those standards, really then we need to take that even further. And hopefully more of the building community will take that on. And I think that was discussed in Atlanta's situation, that we do hope that right now, as we're not in a building frenzy, that we can take time to introduce some new concepts and new approaches. The second thing is transportation. And MORPC and our board is made up of 47 local governments throughout the 12-county area, and we've just implemented something this past spring called Complete Streets. And while we might think, well, that is just, you know, what an accomplishment for bikers and walkers, it really, again, as was discussed earlier, benefits people in our community of all ages. So making sure that whenever there's a road, new road built or it's resurfaced, that we stop and we say, what else can we add for the usability of everyone in the community? So sidewalks, those benefit people who can't drive anymore because of eyesight. But it also benefits young families pushing strollers. Same with biking and transit service. And then, of course, cars. So I think we're starting to make some progress. Certainly, Thursday's event gives us an opportunity to take it even further and find those connections, those similar connections, and collaborate.
614-292-8513. Paul, you're on the air. Welcome. Thanks for waiting.
It's been a while. Mm-hmm. Hi, Ann. Cindy and Linda.
Laura.
Do I have their names right? I'm blessed with parents who are in their early 80s and who are taking measures to stay as long as they can in their home. When the washer broke, instead of just replacing it, they moved it to the first floor so they don't have to, you know, run up and down the basement stairs, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they've done things to the home that hopefully will allow them to stay longer. And I mean, that's just sort of a comment. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I think a lot of people don't think about is access to emergency services. If you live 30 miles out in the country someplace, which is probably where I would prefer to be, that's all well and good. But if you have, you know, a physical, you know, problem, mm-hmm. you know, you may be an hour and a half away from care. Anyway, that's not an issue for my parents. I have a couple questions as it relates to the current immigration confabulation and yelling and screaming and all that kind of stuff. As we age in this country, and you know, people say, "Oh, well, we can solve Social Security. You just have to work until you're 78 years old." Which, of course, is kind of stupid for, you know, if you're a bricklayer. The immigration, these are younger people typically coming to this country, and I would hope would be contributing to the tax base and also be available as health care providers. Things of that nature. I'll take your comments off the air. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Well, he makes good points about planning. I'm glad that his parents are doing that. Everybody should be doing that. They should be thinking that they're gonna live in a place for a long time. They should be looking at first floor bedrooms and bathrooms and all the things he was talking about. If you have emergency problems, you probably shouldn't be living an hour away. You know, you probably should be looking for closer. And you know, the immigration issue, we do have, you know, lots of people that are filling spots of home care workers, which is a good thing because that's going to grow and grow and grow, the need.
It's also an area that has a lot of churn to it. There's a lot of turnover in home health care workers, and I think that's a whole other problem,
right,
topic for conversation. But
right.
I was going to ask you, Paul did bring up the issue of rural living, and I was wondering, you know, particularly Laura, I guess, you know, as an agency or as an organization, how do you balance the needs of rural seniors with suburban seniors, with urban seniors? How do you, when you look at what your role is and what you want to do, you've got a lot of constituencies out there.
Right. And so it's not a one solution fits all. Certainly, we do something every year called State of the Region Report. And this past year, it was on the health of community. So we looked at, you know, what are the number of doctors per residence in the community? And certainly, as you get out into our rural communities, they just, it's much fewer healthcare professionals per residence.
Mm-hmm.
So I know there are things at the State House, there are state legislators looking at, can we create legislation and public policy that would actually bring doctors out of retirement to work in these areas? And many doctors have a really high sense of service to the community and giving back, but there are issues of their own liability to do that. And so I think more policies like that and legislation is going to really help those communities, those rural communities. And that way we can make some of the things possible that we're talking about today, which is allowing people to stay in their homes longer possible. And one thing that just to mention is, you know, neighborhoods, whether they're rural or they're urban or suburban, I think they all benefit with a really nice mix of different residents. So having young families and families that are retired and families with teenagers and families with no children, it just adds to a lot of wonderful diversity and a lot of interesting value to each community.
Yeah. We're very interested in what Atlanta's doing because our communities are so different. We have Fayette County, a much more rural county with a very different elderly population than Columbus. So seeing them work the suburban communities, I think we're going to be interested. I mean, you see in Columbus already some pieces of this that are for all generations. I mean, you look at the Long Street development, you see they've calmed traffic, they've got trees, it's walkable, you know, and so – and getting more affordable housing downtown, you know, older adults want to live downtown too. And so – you know, having more walkways with the countdown on the lights, so you know how long you've got. All these things are starting to happen, so we're encouraged. But you know, seeing how Atlanta deals with some of the suburban communities and more rural communities, I think will be a great interest.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we have an email from Robert. He writes, one of your guests said maintain a high quality of life, emphasis on maintain. But that means they're focusing on clients who already had high quality of life. What do they do for people who don't? That is, for people who have a lower quality of life. Cindy?
Well, we have lots of programs for people. And I would encourage anybody to call our agency, 645-7250, if you're a caregiver or if you're just in search of more resources for yourself. You know, we have people that can work with you on Medicare, food stamps, whatever, home care. I would encourage you to look and find what's available in this community. We're a fairly service-rich community and proud of that. So I would certainly encourage people to do that.
So people can be low income
mm-hmm.
in Central Ohio and have a decent quality of life if
certainly,
they're older.
Certainly. And some of the housing options are helpful to that. You know, you might be living in a situation that isn't good for you, and perhaps we can steer you to a housing option that would increase your quality of living. So I think everybody should check and seek out what's available.
614-292-8513. And Karen, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm enjoying your show very
Thank
much.
You.
I have been a caregiver for my mother who lived out in a rural area, but I'm now the caregiver for my husband who's got a chronic or degenerative brain disease. And I think it would be helpful for, I'm not sure how to do this, but to let the public know what kinds of things are available, what you can do in your own home to keep somebody in the home. It seems to me like with healthcare professionals and hospitals, there's such an emphasis on putting people in a facility. I mean, that's kind of the first thing they say. And there's simple things you can do in the bathroom, like with an elevated toilet seat, with a tub chair. My husband has trouble standing up on his own, so we have a stand-up lift for him, which is, I mean, I didn't know about that until I looked at a catalog, even though we've been to a lot of therapy services. Mm-hmm. And then we now have this wonderful chair. Our car is called a turning automotive system in our car that I can get my husband in and out of the car. The wheelchair actually becomes a car seat. And so I can get him in and out of the car by myself without a ramp, without a whole lot of trouble. And I don't think people know what kinds of things like that might be available.
Yeah,
to them.
Kind of like, why do you have to become an expert in all that stuff? Because it takes a long time to become an expert, doesn't it?
It does. It was really frustrating. I'm a nurse. I have a healthcare background.
Okay.
And it was a challenge to me to kind of find out all those things. And I think there is such a strong, facility emphasis with a lot of healthcare professionals and with a lot of hospitals that families often aren't given other options. I think we need to focus more on home care.
So is it part of not just an infrastructure change, it's not just changing the lights signals, but actually...
It's changing the way people, the way healthcare professionals and think about keeping people in the home. I think it's easier for, a hospital social worker to make a referral to a nursing home, and that's like one referral and it's done. But to set up a home health plan is a little more challenging, and I think we have to sort of change the way we think about things.
Cindy?
I think that's one of the biggest legislative challenges that Ohio's facing right now. We have 75% of our long-term care folks in nursing homes and only 25% in home care. That is a reverse of Oregon that has 75% at home, 25% in institutions. And there have to be some changes. The Ohio has a plan to go forward, but it takes will from the legislature to make those kinds of changes. So we're 100% with you on that. And I would say this livable communities topic, I mean, I relate it also to how much money we're going to spend in the future. With the number of aging folks, there's not enough money for formal care. Let's face it. It's an expensive proposition. So the more communities are working to have easy access homes, transportation close by, the kinds of things people can do to stay at home, the better, because we're just not going to be able to afford the formal services of institutional care that we have now. So congratulations for what you've been able to put together. It does take a while, and for people that are caregivers, there are a lot of caregiver help out there through our agency, through the Alzheimer's Association, through lots of agencies. So, again, if you don't want to learn from scratch, you might try some of the agencies out there that are doing some caregiving information.
Kieran, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. We have an email now from Ben, and we only have about a minute left, so it's a good one, though. Question for your guests. Do you think Central Ohio communities that are building compact downtowns, Creekside and Gahanna, downtown Dublin, are positioning themselves to attract seniors and thus becoming more economically sustainable? Should other communities be moving in this direction?
Well, I'll take that one.
Oh, okay, Laura.
I certainly think they are. I think that steps in those directions with Creekside and Gahanna and Dublin and the Grandview Avenue in Grandview Heights, I mean, they really do offer options for a lot of folks and make it very easy to leave the car at home. Oftentimes, we've heard when we've been going out and doing a recent regional planning effort that a lot of our seniors are becoming very nervous about driving at night, and they don't have any other options. So to be able to live in a neighborhood that does have shopping on the ground floor, that they can walk to the grocery store, they could take their grandchildren to the library and not get into the car, is really desirable. And hopefully we'll see more of that, and just again shows that all types of communities can make that happen.
Okay, that's all the time we have. The hour just flew by. My guests this segment, Laura Kaprowski of MORPSE and Cindy Farson of the Central Ohio Area Agency on Aging. Thank you, Laura and Cindy.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That's all the time we have for this for All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820 NPR News.